hold open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Pierre Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And we originally had Professor Stephen Cohen lined up to talk about his latest book, but that kind of fell through at the last minute. But we can talk about his book anyway, because it's really worth talking about. But first, I'd like to tell you about my encounter with George H.W. Bush. And it happened 30 years ago in 1988. At that time, Bush was vice president, and he was running for president against Michael Dukakis. And so George Bush brought his campaign to Portland, and he had this event called the Ask George Bush Show. And it was at the sunken ballroom of the Masonic Temple, which is that building next to the Art Museum. So the sunken ballroom is kind of, well, it is a ballroom. There's a kind of a dance floor with a red carpet on it. And then off to one side are a lot of chair seats, like kind of like bleachers, as I recall. So a lot of people were there. And George Bush and his wife, Barbara, and Governor Atiyah and his wife came kind of parading in, and they took their seats. And George Bush is out on the floor there with his handheld microphone. And I have to say, when I first saw him coming in, Barbara Bush, her hair was snow white, and she really looked like George's mother, you know. Hate to say it. George Bush is a very trim-looking guy. And anyway, he starts, he points his microphone at different people to ask a question. So I got to ask him this. I said, and this is 1988 when the Central American Wars were going on. And I asked him, how come Nicaragua doesn't have death squads like El Salvador does? And Bush kind of flinched. And he looked at me and he said, I have something to show you. And he motions for this aide to come running in with this leather portfolio. And Bush takes a letter, an envelope from the portfolio. And he says, you can look at this, but you have to give it back because it's the only one I've got. And I was thinking, my gosh, what kind of damning evidence is in that envelope? Well, he said, he gives me the envelope and he says, look at that stamp. Well, I did. The stamp was from Nicaragua, and it had a picture of Karl Marx on it. So that was his evidence. That was his argument against death squads in El Salvador and all that. I was really kind of flabbergasted. By this time, George Bush is sort of down at the other end of the ballroom pointing to somebody else. A woman I know was sitting nearby, and she happened to be a stamp collector. So after the event, she got in the reception line, and she got up to George Bush to shake his hand, and she started to say that Nicaragua also had a George Washington stamp, and she barely got those words out when two security guys picked her up by the elbows and hustled her out of the room. So that was my encounter with George H.W. Bush. And the kind of reasoning that he uses to perpetuate wars in Central America, which are still with us, You know, we helped overthrow an elected leader in Honduras a few years ago, and Hillary Clinton thought that was great. She was Secretary of State at the time. So anyway, let's talk about Cohen's book. It's called War with Russia and a question mark at the end. And it's put out by Skyhorse Publishing. I'm not sure if you can get it at Powell's. You may have to special order it, but for quite a number of years now, Stephen Cohen has been warning about this buildup. There's this sort of incessant propaganda blitz going on about Russia being, kind of the evil empire and Putin being another Hitler and so on and so forth. But this has been going on for quite a while, and it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. According to Stephen Cohen, this new Cold War is more dangerous than the last, and I think so. It's somehow the when we were in the Cold War with the Soviet Union, I think we were more aware of the dangers involved because the Soviet Union was well armed. They had nuclear weapons, and we were very careful in dealing with the Soviet Union. You know, there were a lot of proxy wars between the two countries in various parts of the world, but we were very careful most of the time, not to get into a shooting war with the Soviet Union itself. Trepidation seems to be missing these days. I don't know why it is. Maybe it's because we survived the last one, barely. There were some really close calls. The Cuban Missile Crisis was one. There were other cases where planes were actually in the air with bombs in them, and they got turned back or whatever. The leaders we have now seem to be... I don't know what it is. Maybe they seem to be less wary of a new war. Somehow one thing they believe is that you have sort of smaller nukes that can be used on the battlefield, and they don't have the they're not as catastrophic as the ones we dropped on Hiroshima. But as anybody with a brain could realize, is that little nukes can be responded to, and any response can be bigger than the previous one. So wars get out of hand very easily. So that's one thing that Cohen points out in his book. If anybody wants to call in, the number here is 503-231-8187. What do you think? Do you think we need to go to war with Russia, or how should we deal with Russia? You hear a lot of talk these days about Russia being sort of an empire on the make or something like that, and according to Cohen, these allegations are unproven. But they're getting louder and louder and louder. This whole Russiagate investigation, I'm waiting to see what Robert Mueller has, or Mueller, I guess that's how he pronounces his name. I'm waiting to see what he actually produces. We've been hearing now for months, maybe years, people saying and sort of giving their opinion what Mueller has, what kind of evidence he has gathered, and I'm just waiting to see it all laid out. There have been a whole bunch of indictments. So far, the indictments seem to involve lying to the FBI. But according to Stephen Cohen, the allegations are unproven, And but this is ignored. It's a very interesting thing going on. The one of the allegations is that the Russians hacked into the Democratic National Committee and passed on this information to WikiLeaks. There is a guy, his name is William Binney. He was with the NSA for 30 years, I believe as technical director, and he has written that the it could not have been a hack. It had to be somebody in the inside was downloading this information. And he gives his evidence is that the time it would take to hack the DNC, there was not enough time to do it. It had to be somebody on the inside downloading it in some kind of a thumb drive and passing the information on. Well, that's a very specific point that Binney is making, but the people who keep talking incessantly about the Russians hacking the DNC, if they would confront that and disprove it, that would be fine. But they don't. It's ignored. It's just assumed that the Russians hacked the DNC, and any evidence to the contrary is ignored. And that is bad logic. That's really bad faith. So when they keep on doing that, you hear this on NPR a lot, this kind of, to my mind, it invalidates a lot of the argument. So the evidence that we have indicates, the ignored evidence, that the Russians did not hack the DNC. The information was downloaded and then passed to them. We might also point out that the information was stuff that we had a right to know about. It had to do with what the DNC did to mess up Bernie Sanders' campaign, and it had to do with Hillary Clinton's very expensive speeches to Wall Street brokers. And that's information that should not have been kept secret. You and I and all the people of America have a right to know that stuff. So whoever passed on that information did us all a service. And it's very interesting now that WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been sort of being held prisoner. Well, he is being held prisoner now, because if he leaves the Ecuadorian embassy in London, he will be immediately arrested and very likely flown back to the United States to go on trial for espionage or something like that. And several high-level American politicians have already said what they would do with Julian Assange, up to and including a death penalty. So maybe the vitriol that the U.S. is exhibiting against Assange has to do with this whole thing about the information that leaked out of the DNC. I still come back to a remark that Senator Chuck Schumer made a few years back, said that when Donald Trump came out talking about the deep state, that the Schumer said, well, that the intelligence agencies have, and he said, six ways from Sunday of getting back at you. And I think we are seeing that in action. If anybody wants to call in with a question or comment, the number is 503-231-8187. But getting back to this whole Russiagate thing, and this is, I think, is part of a push for war. The deep state, originally, that term, when I first ran across that term, it was Peter Dale Scott used it to describe the intelligence agencies, CIA, and also the NSA, and also is kind of synonymous with the war state. You know, the Pentagon and the militarists, the people are constantly pushing for war. You know, we've been now in sort of steadily fighting wars now for the last, as long as I can remember. I think ever since World War II ended, the United States has been in one war after another, not very successfully for the nation, but very successfully for the munitions makers. So the U.S. officials, and this is from Stephen Cohen's book, War with Russia, you know, U.S. officials keep making bigger threats, and he names a few, like Kay Bailey Hutchison threatens to, quote, take out Russian missiles. She was a former governor of Texas. I believe she's a U.N. representative now, replacing Nikki Haley. Ryan Zinke, who is in President Trump's cabinet, threatens a naval blockade of Russia. Former Ambassador Michael McFaul calls Russia a rogue state and the world's greatest threat. And there have been all kinds of sanctions put on Russia, which basically amounts to a declaration of economic war. But we have a caller. Dale is on the line. Morning, Dale.
Good morning. I would like to point out, Per, and I really appreciate your program, by the way. You seem to be a voice of sanity amongst a lot of other.
Oh, a lot of sane people down here at KABU.
Well, you have the Abe and Joe show that have been pushing this Russiagate nonsense from day one. And in fact, I called up Joe a few weeks back and asked him for some evidence of that, and he called me a paranoid delusional and hung up.
He did. Well, I don't know. I can't say much about that. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. I wish Joe would call me up sometime. We could talk about that. But, well, I think they are mesmerized by Donald Trump. This guy, Donald Trump, is so over the top. He is so repulsive that it's very easy for rational people to get kind of bulldozed by this guy. You know?
I agree. You know, he is, everything bad that Joe says about him is probably true. But on the other hand, what he's doing is hardly any big difference from what was done before. I mean,
that is,
you know,
true.
There was a big to do about the Border Patrol using tear gas. Well, they were using it during Obama's administration. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Obama ordered it. You know, I'm not sure Trump ordered it either. You mm-hmm. know, these agencies tend to kind of act on their own.
Well, that's true. Thank you for pointing that out. My big fear is that that eventually, when they, I think Trump is on his way out for good reasons. But my fear is that he'll be replaced by some. Everybody will breathe a big sigh of relief. The boogeyman is gone. Now we can get back to normal. Well, back to normal is guys like George H.W. Bush and his son and all the wars that they were pushing. It's very interesting how George Bush the younger is back in everybody's good graces because he's not Donald Trump. So. Anyway, thanks for that call. I think we have some other people on the line. Mike is on the line. Morning, Mike.
Hello. Hey, how are you?
Oh,
hey,
good.
I just finished a book that I was real impressed with it, and I learned from it from KABU, so thank you. But it was called giants, the global corporate elite. Within that book, the three main methods for basically it's got it kind of wired down to about 17 corporations: Alon's, BlackRock, Bank of America, all these kinds of the people we love to hate, you know, and those 17 are totally interconnected. They control 41.1 trillion dollars. And their whole goal is to make money. The things that are making money for them are banks, of course, basically money preparation, money collection, debt collection, all that kind of stuff is all wrapped up into one thing. The second one is war and war preparation. That's their second biggest, that's their second thing of making money in the world today. So that means endless war. That means all of this stuff. And then the third one is environmental degradation, of which they're the cause, but it's also the place where they see the most money to be made.
Well, the panic.
This is what we're up against. And Donald Trump is he keeps reminding me of O.J. Simpson, the O.J. Simpson trial. I think he's there for entertainment value. I think he's there to exactly do what he's doing. He's rocking the boat. He's shaking everybody up. He's shaking the Republicans. But within that chaos,
you got a lot of interference there.
Will push more power down, and it will kind of work out the edges, and it'll work out the places where it's having trouble now of making money on its money. And that's whole game, and that's what we have to fight. So we have to read that book. We have to go to quit supporting any of those corporations and move the whole company towards a bottom-up approach.
Okay.
You know, democracy is gone, you know, but anyway, that's it. Love you guys. Thank you.
It's a very good book, Giants. In fact, I interviewed the author, Peter Phillips, and it's a very good reference book. In a way, maybe Donald Trump's function is to be the, when you have a two-party system, you inevitably get to a lesser of two evils kind of approach. And it almost seems like the evils are getting worse and worse, and now we have the worst of all. But we have another caller on the line. Good morning, Boris?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, good morning.
Yeah, I have two comments. First of all, the amount of willful ignorance on the part of what I call lazy lefties is thoroughly disgusting. And unfortunately, I agree with Dale. There's a contingent at KBOO that falls heavily into that category, namely the Tuesday morning talk radio show. I heard your call into the show, and as is the case across the board, they simply ignored your statements about William Binney because it doesn't fit the narrative. Their narrative is what you see and hear on MSNBC, and they're sticking to it.
Well, this is the prevailing attitude.
It's unfortunate that KBOO has representatives who fall into that category. I'm thoroughly disgusted by it. Second point is no one, certainly not the lazy lefties, is really willing to go at what I see as the corrupt power of the Clinton Foundation. Can you name me any other time that you can recall where an American entity was able to back down the FBI like the Clintons did? Just think about that for a minute. They refused to turn over the servers that the FBI had subpoenaed. Just try to imagine anyone else being able to get away with that.
I don't know all the details of that. I know that
that if you're up on it, you know that the FBI subpoenaed those servers and the Clintons refused to turn them over.
Oh, well, what's the next step? Is the FBI going to take them to court or what?
There is no next step. That was supposedly the end of it. Just forget about it. Move on, as I'm talking about with these lazy lefties. Don't look at these uncomfortable facts. Just you know, forget about it, move on, deny that, you know, such a thing exists, or call you a paranoid, like Dale was mentioning.
Well, it shouldn't be the last step. There should be other things that can be done. There should be some kind of...
Well, if you have that level of corruption in the government, it certainly could be the last step.
I know that there are some illegal, I think there are some lawsuits that are going on right now. I don't know what they will produce, but, you know, there are lawsuits, so I'm waiting to kind of see the results of those. Are you there, Boris?
Well, don't hold your breath. That's all I can tell you.
No, but, well, I'm just hoping that I'm for letting all the information out, letting...
Of course, that's what should happen in a country that has a free press. But let's not kid ourselves.
Well, I think our press, namely the New York Times and the Washington Post, are so invested in some kind of war with Russia that you know, I think both those papers are pretty much under control of the war state. I hate to say it. I mean, a lot of ways the New York Times and the Washington Post are excellent newspapers, but when it comes to war and peace, I would not depend on them for any accurate information. I think they are being very partial, and so I mean, I get my information from a lot of other places other than the New York Times and the Washington Post. Do we have another caller? Mike is on the line. Okay, Mike, morning. We have about a minute or two left. Mike?
Yeah. Is it this Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, the media, the powers that be have really done their job, you know, the lazy lefties, huh? I got clear off track there. That, you know, people have got to stop thinking about left or right, and Democrat or Republican, we're all Americans. What I don't understand is why people aren't totally up in arms, why people aren't going berserk, you know?
I don't...
Turn off that television. Turn it off. It's poison.
I agree with that. I don't even have a television set, so it gives me a lot of time to read books and things like that. But anyway...
Yeah, me too. Books and my guitar, you know, and I spend a lot of time with that particular instrument.
That's probably very good.
I don't understand why people aren't really going berserk here. And quit blaming the Democrats, quit blaming the Republicans, you know. It's the rich and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the end game? What do these millionaires expect to do? Without poor people able to buy their goods, how can, you know, they're making money without it, aren't they?
That is true. That's a very good question. Well, anyway, I think we're near the end of our time here. I want to thank you very much for that call. I think Mike has raised a question underlying all our economic troubles, that some people are so rich, other people are too poor to buy the stuff that our economy produces, so stuff does not get sold, and so the economy kind of sinks into a quagmire. Anyway, our time is up. I want to thank you for the calls, and stay tuned on KBOO, your radio station.
Holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Today on on Flashpoint's Pulitzer Prize-winning writings from her new collection of poetry, Taking the Arrow Out of the Heart. It was a beautiful evening hosted by Nina Serrano, happened here in the Bay Area. This is a beautiful reading, and I am delighted to share Alice Walker with you. I'm Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina and the entire Flashpoints team, and we will be right back. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Well, today is an incredibly special pleasure to be able to share the work with Alice Walker, to share the work that we do in politics, in political actions, and in this case, share the work of poetry. And I have a whole other life in poetry, and it's a delight.